Italian Wine Podcast. Cin Cin with Italian Wine People.
Hello, this is the Italian Wine Podcast. My name is Monty Walden. My guest today is Sarah Heller. Sarah is a Master of Wine who sits on the faculty of Vinitaly International, also holds the title of VIA, Vinitaly International, Wine Ambassador. Welcome.
Thank you.
So today, you and I, or mainly you, hopefully, are going to talk to us about Barolo, which is a DOCG wine from Piemonte in northwest Italy.
Oh, well, you've taken all of my facts from me. But yes.
Well, it was great meeting you. I like it's a master of wine that's concise.
Absolutely. Yes.
So let's start off. Whereabouts? Where is it? Where is it?
So it's in Piemonte, the northwesternmost section of Italy, other than the Valle d'Aosta, but we won't get into
the
too many specifics.
Area.
Yeah, the skiing area, absolutely, and the country of white truffles. So arguably the only great wine region in the world that has a food culture that kind of lives up to the quality of the wine.
Tuscan friends would be tearing. You know, I can get you protection. I have a lot of friends in Tuscany.
Oh dear, it's hard to be unbiased about Piemonte.
You're a big fan then?
Yeah, it's the first place I got interested in wine. I was there working at a restaurant as a cook in Turin, actually. When I took time off from university, and this is how
you
I ended up on this.
Off.
Yeah, I know that's not very geeky of me, is it? But you know, you've got to go out and find what else is interesting.
So you're working as a chef.
I was working as an apprentice chef, perhaps. It's quite a casual place. The name of it was Boia Faus, which is Piemontese dialect for like what the.
Piemontese dialect for.
For what the. I mean, I don't know. Am I allowed to swear on your podcast?
Yeah, you can, yeah.
Okay, what the fuck? So it's, it's where I first fell in love with wine, was interested in food. So
how old were you then?
20.
So very young.
At the time, yeah.
So that was an early love affair.
Indeed, yeah.
So then you investigated.
Never quite gotten over it.
Investigated the wines.
Yes.
And obviously, what are the big guns in Piemonte? What are we going to talk about today?
Well, so Barolo and Barbaresco. Today we're going to focus on Barolo. I was actually just in both places about 24 hours ago. But today we'll focus on Barolo, just because there's more recent additions to the complexity there with the 2010 MGA edition.
So MGA is?
Menzione Geografiche Aggiuntive.
Which translates as?
Geographical mentions, additional geographical mentions. So nothing particularly sexy. But
so what does that mean for the label?
Yeah, it effectively identifies specific vineyard names that are allowed to appear on the label because there was a lot of confusion, right? There are crews that are known for being very high quality.
So there's a sort of single vineyard areas.
Indeed.
Rather than actual single vineyards, although they can be.
Yeah, really depends on the size. Some are absolutely immense, so like Busia. So you really need to have more detail.
Which village is Busia? How many villages are there in the Barolo DOCG zone?
So 11 villages, but 5 that really have a high concentration of these MGAs and are really known for producing the top wines.
So the 5 are?
La Mora, Barolo, obviously, Castiglione Faletto, Serra Lunga d'Alba, and Monforte d'Alba. And they all sort of have their individual traits. It's largely determined, or traditionally it was largely thought to be determined by the nature of the soils.
So just one parameter, basically, soil.
That's the one
traditionally,
exactly.
And now?
Much more investigation of specific exposures and just a greater understanding that the soil is not uniform in the way that people once thought, perhaps, that it was. There are a lot of different factors, obviously starting to change with the climate being in transition, as it were. I don't know if anybody...
So what are the origins of these soils, just in a nutshell?
Yeah, so geologically, the whole area is very heavy clay, for the most part, and it really depends on the amount of calcareous material, sand and sandstone. So the heaviest soils, the sort of dense sandstone ones, are more around Serra Lunga d'Alba, Monforte, Castiglione, is sort of the blend.
So what does that do to the Barolo's yeah. Nebbiolos from that particular, they high in alcohol, low in alcohol? What does it mean?
It's not as much about the alcohol as the tannic structure. It's just this robustness, this longevity. And it does come across also in the aromatics. You get just a sort of darkness, less obvious aromatic lift. Whereas from the, so these are the soils that you can divide them into all different sort of categories. But in terms of the age, that's what was used to be called the Helvetian. And now the Saravalian.
That's the geological epoch.
Yes, exactly.
Which was when?
God, it's all in the Messinian, and about 12 million years ago.
Okay.
Versus the Tortonian, which are slightly younger, and they're more like 7-8 million years ago.
And the Tortonian soils, the characteristics are?
More sand, although there's a huge debate about which ones have more sand, but they're generally lighter in quality and have, it sounds counterintuitive, but the clays, there are these blue clays, and they tend to produce this sort of lighter, more aromatic, pretty style. Earlier drinking styles, particularly La Mora is known for producing these perfumed, almost Pinot-like styles.
And does that go for the colour as well, these changes, and sort of have something on the colour as well?
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's a huge amount of winemaking that goes into the colour of the wines, especially, we'll get into maybe modernist and traditionalist later, but when people were really focused on extracting as much colour as they could, largely to appeal to sort of American critical tastes, you got completely out of balance. You get wines from La Mora that are really concentrated and dark and don't look like they're made of Nebbiolo at all.
So what you're saying is winemaking is there's kind of less of it, and it's more, the wines are more terroir driven. So if we wanted to not generalize, but say give me some examples of a classic wine, not necessarily the producer, but a classic part of a particular commune, say if you contrast X with Y, you'll see two, they're both Barolos, but they're two very different ones. What would you use as a good example if you were teaching?
I mean, probably you would have to go to producers, because it's not really about the terroir that makes these traditional versus not, but I mean, classically, Bartolo Mascarello is a real staunch traditionalist.
So where's he based?
Well, they have land in Canubi. Where are they? They're in Barolo. And more of a modern style might be Roberto Vertu, and he is in La Mora. And there's just the traditionalist-modernist debate, I think, has sort of been outgrown by the region. It's really probably overplayed among consumers, and so I don't want to perpetuate it too much, but there are still some differences.
Well, maybe 20 years ago, those differences were much starker, weren't they?
Absolutely, yeah.
A real clear division between the modernist and the traditionalist, yeah.
Yeah, and unfortunately, by a lot of people, it's just been boiled down to the modern styles used by Barrique and the traditionalists do not. And I think it was so many more things. It was about finding more concentration in the vineyard, some of which is positive, right? There was a lot of green harvesting that happened, but
maybe too much sometimes.
Yes, absolutely. But I think there tends to be a belief now that traditional is the best, and it's not necessarily true. I think they needed to go through this phase where some people
modernity.
Went. Absolutely. They needed a bit of an incentive to change, because if you try some of these older wines that were made with these very very long macerations, with vines that were maybe higher yielding than they should have been, you just get these very hard bitter tannins that have never really gone away. And now the obviously at the height of the modernist fetish, I will say, I've tried some of those wines from the early 2000s, late 90s, from the producers who were really, you know, using things like roto fermenters, really trying to get as much out of the skins as possible. And those wines are falling apart now too, for their own reasons, right? The alcohol was too robust. There wasn't actually enough connection of the color to the tannins, and so the phenolic chains are just sort of falling apart. So obviously, neither extreme is positive, but the vast majority of producers now have come towards the middle.
Phenolic Chains sounds like a rock band, yeah. That's a great one.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, heavy metal.
So what
yeah.
about climate change?
Climate change. So definitely there is an awareness in the region that it's going to be challenging for them. They're kind of right at the edge, because it's characteristically been thought of as a cool climate region, but with lots of sunshine, and all of the allocation of the MGAs, these crews, the decisions about which are the positive ones was based on where the snow melted first, right? So typically the most prestigious ones are the ones that were warmer, so things like Canubi, Vigna Rionda, often amphitheaters where lots of sun was collected. Those are not, I don't want to say those sites specifically, but warmer sites are not necessarily going to be the ones that produce the greatest wines 50 years from now.
But viticulture is changing there, isn't it?
Absolutely.
In terms of, the classic look was the kind of no grass at all in the vineyard. My last visit there, I was talking to some organic growers. One of the reasons organics are becoming more popular, leaving grass between the rows, is because if you have these rain events, you get less erosion. Also, you can get into the vineyard with your tractor. There's no grass there. It's very slippy and people do die. They fall off and they die.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was there in 2014 when they had exactly the issue that there was just so much rain coming down and people couldn't even get in to spray. It was dangerous to get up there with the little tractors. And it because of these heavy clays in the soil, it just becomes almost impossible to move around, literally. So yes, there are a lot more people creating a sword. Yeah.
You can have a swathe. A swathe of swords.
Pardon me.
Like a queen. Bring me my sword.
My sword. Yeah.
Madam,
it just
would you like
odd.
Some grass, or would you like an actual sword?
Sword. Yeah.
A swathe of
swords. Quite right.
Sounds like a band.
Another band. I mean, we're just gonna sprout all these ideas for bands over the course of this conversation. Indeed. So lots of different types of grass being grown, depending on what the needs of the vineyard are, right? So some that create these very thick straws that then are able to be flattened out and create kind of mulch.
Cacciamatore is called in Italian.
Right. Others that, vetches and various leguminous plants that are contributing more nitrogen, others that are taking it out. So I think there's a much greater sensitivity to what the vineyard needs and how the grasses can contribute to that, obviously also attracting insects. And
doing it, and also having a grass competition, which isn't actually over competing with the vines as well.
Indeed, yeah. 2017, that was a really big challenge, actually, where sometimes they even the most dedicated producers, so for instance, Gaia, have been really working on only flattening their grass, never actually cutting it, because that
rolling it, yeah.
Yeah. Because that takes additional water from the soil. They, I believe, actually had to cut it and sort of clean, just because there was so little water, especially in the early part of the season. So, yeah, real challenges. I mean, when you get to the most extreme of conditions, I think people have to sort of set aside their priorities, their priority towards creating this sort of sustainable pattern, ironically enough, in the most extreme conditions.
Right, last question about the actual Nebbiolo itself from Barolo. Mm-hmm. So what does Nebbiolo normally taste of, and what makes it different in Barolo?
Right, so
flavors,
Nebbiolo,
arrangeability, or tannic structure, anything like that?
Yeah, so Nebbiolo is an interesting one. It is an aromatic, or it's not an aromatic red grape in the way that other things like
Sauvignon Blanc.
No,
it's perfumed.
Yeah, it's perfumed, precisely. It's more like Pinot Noir. It's not like some of the genuine aromatic red grapes like Gruche or, what am I trying to say, Lacrimora?
Lacrima di Moro.
Exactly. Lacrima di Moro d'Alba.
Kind of got that. They both got this kind of jelly fruit.
Yeah, exactly. It's not that kind of candied character. It's the famous characters are obviously this rose petal and tar, although a lot of modern leaning producers kind of resent this tar characterization. They think of it as something unclean. My argument would be that all the best wines in the world have something a little bit filthy to touch.
I didn't think I'd hear you use that language on that podcast.
Oh dear. Button myself up. Yeah, no, I think it's a vital trait of all great wines that they do something a little bit bent. And I think you find this to a greater degree in Barolo and Barbaresco than in other areas that grow Nebbiolo. So you can also find it in Valle d'Aosta, Valtellina in Lombardia, in the north of Piemonte, and in Roero, just across the river, across the Tanaro. But it's only really in Barolo Barbaresco where you get these just the intensity of the layering of the aromatics and also the structure. I mean, I think Gemighertinara and Valtellina are probably coming close in terms of ageability, but I haven't had really, really old wines from those regions that have the same robustness against time that Barolo does, especially.
Cool. Just want to say thanks to my guest today, Sarah Heller, Master of Wine, via Italian Wine Ambassador. Thanks for talking today about the Barolo region in Piemonte. We'll get you back on the show at some stage to talk about other Italian wine regions. Thank you.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Follow Italian Wine Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.